യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം ബലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദ്യകേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ കൃമാ വിവരണസ്യ ച. So in the last session we were discussing this seventeenth sutra of Samadhipada. That sutra deals with the first stage in samadhi, that is called samprajnata samadhi, that the first stage where we get mastery over nature. In fact, technically this is the stage associated with what we call vibhutis, psychic powers, psychological powers, which we read a lot about, we hear a lot about this special psychic powers of great spiritual teachers. And this happens in all traditions. So when mind gets focused on nature, and when the mind soars above the influence of nature, and when mind gets mastery over nature, then nature itself, all natural phenomena, come under the control of such a spiritual seeker. So that explains why these great spiritual teachers could exercise control over nature. So we are reading Vivekananda's famous exposition. There's a special reason why I decided to read Swami Vivekananda's explanation of this sutra. The sutras are being, these two sutras, 17 and 18, have been elaborately explained and described the traditional Sanskrit commentaries. But Swami Vivekananda, living in 19th century, explains the mystery of these sutras and the teachings in modern language. So I shall try to explain the process. As Swamiji says, Samadhi is divided into two categories. One is called the Samprajnata, the other is called Asamprajnata. Where we focus on certain objects of nature and get complete mastery over those objects, that is called Samprajnata. It means where the prajna is involved. Prajna means a deep insight into the nature of things. An insight that you normally cannot get through hard work or intellectual comprehension. Sometimes intellect may not be able to reveal the deeper aspects of certain phenomena. And there, the mind is able to understand through another process we call intuition, but in the yoga tradition it is called prajna. It is the higher purified intuition or insight. Vitarka vichara ananda asmita anugamath samprajnatah. This concentration, samprajnata, it is the right knowledge, that is. But remember, it is again not the highest. It is higher, not the highest. We are able to get mastery over nature, but we are not able to get freedom or liberation. That comes next. We'll explain this later. Even when we get mastery over nature, we are within the threshold of nature. We are still within nature. In Asamprajnata Samadhi, which we are going to discuss in the 18th Sutra, next Sutra, we are discussing how we get not only mastery but also freedom or liberation. So there are two samadhis Swamiji mentions. In the Sampragnata Samadhi come all the powers of controlling nature. We already discussed this. What is meant by controlling nature? So Swamiji in this context refers to the Sankhya philosophy, which is the philosophical background of yoga psychology. Yoga practice, yoga psychology, yoga philosophy is rooted in the metaphysical principles of Sankhya system. The Sankhya system speaks of a total of 25 categories, of which two are fundamental categories. One is Purusha, the other is Prakriti. From Prakriti, 23 evolutes evolve, we already discussed. And these 23 evolutes of Prakriti constitute the entire universe, the entire creation. Not only the external empirical phenomena, but also our mind, our intellect, our senses of action, senses of perception, buddhi, mind, all these, our ego system, are all evolutes of Prakriti, nature. So when a spiritual seeker, through concentration, gets a complete mastery over nature, then he has reached Sampragnata Samadhi. But as I mentioned earlier, even this mastery does not actually give us freedom. Before finishing the 17th Sutra, I shall give an idea of the 18th Sutra because they are closely related. The 18th Sutra is Virama Pratyaya Abhyasa Purva Samskarasesho Anyaha. This is the 18th Sutra. The other superior samadhi is attained by constant practice of cessation of all mental activity. There is a very famous description of this, in which our chitta, our mental system, retains only unmanifested impressions. That's a stage of complete freedom. Now, when a person transcends the Sampragnata level, the early samadhi level, the level in which he gets complete mastery over nature, to the level where he gets complete freedom from nature, this is the intervening state, from Sampragnata to Asampragnata state. In Sampragnata, we get complete mastery over nature, which means we are able to restrain, control in our mind, our senses, in our interaction with all external world. When we feel like getting angry, something in our own system restrains. When we get too much obsessed with let us say, an unwelcome, undesirable idea or a desire to do things which are not very desirable, then mind is able to restrain the senses, because immediately we are able to get a clear insight into the nature of that undesirable action or idea. So it is restrained. This is called mastery. Things are there, but they are all within our control. That is Sampragnata Samadhi. In Asampragnata Samadhi, even these obsessions or ideas or desires do not emerge in the mind. They are all in unmanifested forms. They don't even emerge to disturb us. So there is no need to restrain them. Between these two stages, a spiritual seeker frequently confronts one problem. Vivekananda, in some other lecture, makes an interesting statement. See, every spiritual seeker has to go through the whole distance of his spiritual journey. What does it mean? Suppose we try to practice meditation, prayer, we try to reach the samadhi state. Then all the impressions and memories which remain accumulated in the mental system, they come to the surface. They may not have any influence on us, but we are able to restrain them, but they come to the surface. That's why Swami Vivekananda says, when you start your spiritual life, you have to relive and re-experience all the events, all the experiences you had experienced in all the previous past circles in a subtle form. Subtle form means what? A memory or a vritti emerges in the mental system. It comes from a life cycle that you have lived maybe in 3000 BC. But you don't have to live through. The memory comes and goes away. So in a subtle dimension, you are re-experiencing that. Example, you have heard of Buddha's Jataka tales. Buddha had so many life cycles, past impressions, past memories, past lives. It comes in the Khuddaka Nikaya of Sutta Pitaka, three Pali canonical literature, Sutta Pitaka, Vinaya Pitaka, Abhidhamma Pitaka. Buddha's original teachings were recorded in Pali script about 80 years after his passing away in the first Buddhist council that was held in the capital city of the country where Buddha attained his enlightenment. It is called Rajagriha. It is today's close to the Patna city of today's Bihar state in India, not far from the Bodh Gaya, means Tibet. So there the first Buddhist council was held, and a number of Buddhist monks and nuns gathered, and some of them still somehow remembered Buddha's teachings because Buddha preached in Prakrit language, the vernacular of the masses. So the script was Pali. So they were recited and they were recorded in Pali scripts called Sutra Pitakas, means three baskets. Sutta Pitaka, Vinaya Pitaka, Abhidhamma Pitaka. Of which Sutta Pitaka is very important because Dhamma Pada appears in that. Another second is Khuddaka Nikaya. For there you find this description of Buddha's past life cycles. The Buddha had to live through all those life cycles, hundreds of previous life cycles. He was born as human beings and also as animals, beasts, birds, kings, and so on. So all these memories, impressions, re-emerge in Buddha's mind. He didn't have to live like them, but then when a memory comes, you are actually going back in time to that particular life cycle in which you had an experience which caused this memory. So it is a kind of traveling backward in time. In normal life cycle also, normal human life. See, when you remember an experience you had 10 years back or 20 years back, you are mentally traveling backward, say 20 years backward, and reliving that. So when we remember impressions and memories with name and form, it could be an experience coming from this life. Because these eyes have seen that form, and these ears must have heard that word. So there is association with the present, senses of perception of this life cycle. When you have a memory, it could be in the form of a strong, inexplicable idea or a samskara or a characteristic which you cannot really explain, then it is a memory coming from previous life because you don't remember name and form along with that. When you remember something with name and form, it comes from this life. When you remember or when you identify with a subtle idea, then it is coming from previous life cycle. So Buddha's life, this Jataka tales, is a classic example of this transition from samprajñāda to asamprajñāda state, where the mind goes backward and mind throws up past memories, but a spiritual seeker is not trapped by them. The spiritual seeker has complete mastery. So you are, they come and go, that's all. You are not affected by that. So that's what Vivekananda says, this meaning of the statement, that every spiritual seeker has to go through this experience. That's why when you start meditation, when we take seriously to spiritual life, a whole lot of conflicting ideas, problems, challenges emerge in the mental system. It doesn't mean that you get these problems because you took to spiritual life. Actually, because you took to spiritual life, you are cleaning them. You are just bringing them out and throwing them away. So all these memories and impressions are brought up to the surface, and the chittam is completely cleansed. And that's what is going to be discussed, the 18th sutra, where we say virama pratyaya abhyasa purva samskaraseshu anyaha. Means these pratyas, we will discuss what is pratyaya, what is virama, all this we are going to discuss. So when these memories come, you with a strong willpower, you say no, you are not going to get yourself identified with them. So we'll discuss when we deal with the 18th sutra, we especially in the light of King Bhoja's commentary. Bhoja has written two well-known books, Bhoja Vritti and Rajamartanda. It's a Sanskrit commentary where Bhoja makes a very, very psychologically very profound description of what is virama, what is pratyaya. Okay. Now coming to the subject again. Swami Vivekananda continues, as you will remember, egoism and will and mind have a common basis, the chitta or the mind stuff, out of which they are all manufactured. So, chitta again, chitta is a mental system where all memories, impressions, vasanas, vrittis are stored or get accumulated. That is chitta. It's like a bag in which all these old memories get accumulated. Now, when your ego system identifies, connects with that chittam, it also connects with all the memories which are stored in the mental system. So accordingly, we become angry, we become happy or unhappy. So also mind. Our mind also gets connected to this ego system, chittam. So the mind assumes its characteristics, its nature, and the world is perceived by the mind and interpreted by the mind. The mind interprets or interacts with the world with the help of these characteristics, tendencies, which mind gets connected to from the chittam. That's the idea behind. The mind stuff takes in the forces of nature and projects them as thought. So what does the chittam does? All the forces of nature are absorbed in the mind, and the mind interprets them as thoughts. So in a way, we are all living in the world of thoughts. An external phenomenon is there. Without that, a corresponding thought cannot emerge. But the way we interpret a phenomenal, an external phenomenon, or the way we interpret our own inner experiences depends upon the way the mind reads those experiences. And the mind reads those experiences according to its own characteristics. And these characteristics, the mind gathers from chitta. And the chittam is a vast reservoir of memories, impressions gathered in innumerable life cycles. That's why, as I mentioned earlier, when you remember something, You are traveling backward in time. See, when an old man of 90 years remembers his childhood, the days when he was going to school, something must have, he must have maybe playing with other friends. He must have been scolded by teacher for not doing well in the classroom. Things like that an old man may remember. Or older woman, of course, may remember. Now, when he remembers them, actually he's traveling backward in time. Biologically he cannot travel, but in time he can travel. How does he travel in time? He travels through this path of impressions and memories. And where are these memories stored? In the mental system. So the mental system or chittam, which is a repository of all memories and impressions, they color the mind, and the mind accordingly interprets all experiences. There must be something again where both force and matter are one. This is called avyakta, the unmanifested state of nature before creation, and to which after the end of the cycle, the whole of nature returns to come out again after another period. This deals with the cyclic, it's called the cyclicism in the creation theory of Sankhya philosophy. It is closely related to Sankhya. According to Sankhya system, and that may be some kind of a forerunner of Darwinian. Of course, Darwin was limited in this biological level, but maybe Sankhya system goes beyond that, of course. So, according to Sankhya system, the creation doesn't take place in a straight line progression. It is a kind of cyclic progression. So, the world, when the world is created, actually it is not created, it is projected. So very often the Sankhyas do not use the word creation in the sense in which creationists use the word. What they mean is the subtle or the unmanifested, appearing to be the manifested or the gross, is called creation. And this created world may exist maybe billions of years or billions of years and will go back to its pre-manifest state, to its unmanifested state. That unmanifested state is called avyakta. Now what is unmanifested state? A state in which the creation is not, it doesn't manifest in name and form, that is called unmanifested state. When it manifests in with name and form, it is called creation or manifestation. In its subtle form, it remains unmanifested or avyakta. The word used is avyakta. That's why in great Sanskrit classics like Bhagavata Purana, creation, the srishti is not used. It is sarga, means projection. It's a projection of something, projection of the subtle in gross form is creation, and a gross form going back to its subtle form is called, it is called pralaya or dissolution, it is called. Not destruction, dissolution. Dissolving means what? It going back to it and coming, just to come back again, maybe after billions of years. This is a special contribution of the Sankhya philosophy. You find it in Vedanta also. But the idea that creation and existence is not moving in a straight line progression, but that it is a cyclicism. It is called the theory of cyclicism. It's called. Not that God's one day morning after breakfast sits and creates the world. Nothing of the kind. That's a very easy way of explaining. Then philosophy will commit suicide, of course. So, but here, the Sankhya philosophers, they observe the external nature, the five elements, the gross dimension of the created world. Then they analyze and observe, and they finally come to a state where they think of a, let's say, pre-Big Bang state. I mean, I'm trying to put it in the language of modern physics. This is the pre-Big Bang state, what is called avyakta or unmanifested form. Now, this avyakta, vyakta, or unmanifest, manifest difference exists in human feelings, human emotions, human attitudes, etc. Now, what does a yogi do to control, to have mastery over his feelings, emotions and feelings? He tries to trace these impressions, feelings, memories, attitudes, and try to analyze, and he will try to bring them back to its pre-manifest state, unmanifest state, to its subtle state. And then he find it is just, there is nothing particular about it. A previous memory in subtle state manifests as a gross attitude. When it manifests in its gross form, it becomes an attitude, an obsession, a phobia, a fear, a doubt, and mental conflicts. You try to trace them back to its cause, then you can see a cause behind it. In manifest form, there is a cause. When you see the cause, the effect is dissolved in cause. So that's how a yogi is able to get complete mastery over his mind, his attitudes. And when he does that, he is able to get complete mastery over nature. Because it's the mind that interprets nature, external nature, according to the impressions gathered in the mental system. So that's why I'm mentioning this cycle. So this is a very important point, remember, though it is not a part of yoga philosophy, yoga psychology. So this important theory of cyclicism is the philosophical background of both yoga, Sankhya, Buddhism also. Pratiti Samutpada state is the same. Cyclic. If the world creation doesn't exist, the creation doesn't manifest as an eternal progression, means from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like that, the straight line progression. No, rather, the world is a projection, and a projected world will go back to subtle unprojected form. The manifested world will go back to pre-manifest form. Pre-manifest means in its form where it doesn't appear in name and form. So there is no variety. Everything is avyakta. So that's an important point to remember. Now Vivekananda says, that sort of meditation where the external gross elements are the objects is called savitarka. Vitarka means question. So we already discussed here, the samprajnata samadhi has got these four important elements. Vitarka, vichara, ananda, asmita. Vitarka here means reasoning, questioning, where we try to analyze things with our intellect. Again, when we try to analyze with our intellect, we get mastery over it, but there is no freedom. And again, the next stage is nirvitarka, where we transcend the state of vitarka or reasoning. Similarly, there is savichara, where we get mastery with vichara, with discrimination, and beyond that, nirvichara. So that we already explained many of these things. Sananda, where we have got this inner bliss, and it is called sananda, then it's called asmita. With asmita, it's called sasmita. So we already explained this samprajnata samadhi. If you got any doubt, we can explain. We have been discussing this for the last three sessions. So now we'll stop this. Now we'll go to asamprajnata samadhi, which I just touched in the early part of this class. As I mentioned, you know, the spiritual seeker, any serious spiritual seeker, when he takes intensely to spiritual life, will have to face or go through this stage of conflicts, mental conflicts, inner challenges, and so on. What it means is, when you take to spiritual life, you are moving towards freedom or liberation. And in that process, all the accumulated memories and impressions, samskaras, vrittis, which have accumulated in the mental system for the last innumerable life cycles, had to be brought up to the surface and removed. So how do we remove it? When they appear, we negate them. When something, let us say, when we face a problem in ordinary life, and when we study the problem, when we get a thorough picture of the nature of the problem, that problem is no more a problem. A problem is a problem only when it comes as a surprise, when we do not know the background, when we try to explain, when we trace the problem to its cause, then that problem is removed. So, when these conflicting thought currents emerge in the mental system, we are able to remove them through a process, and through that process, all these vrittis are completely removed. So there is a famous king in India, it's called Bhoja. He's also the author of the famous commentary on the Bhoja Vritti and Virajamata. He says, Viramascha so pratyaschaidi virama pratyaha tasya abhyasaka paunapunyena chedasi niveshanam tatra ya kaji vrittihi ullasadi tasya nedi nedi di dairandiryena padyudasanam. It's a very Sanskrit text. So what is virama? Virama pratyabhyasa purvaha samskarasesu anyaha. It's a description of asamprajnata samadhi. This higher samadhi is attained by the constant practice of cessation of all mental activities. When vrittis and thoughts and ideas emerge in the mental system, we negate them. And when we negate them, the chittam is cleansed of those vrittis. And then what happens? These impressions may remain in unmanifested form in the mental system, but they never interfere with our life because they cannot manifest as attitudes, ideas, or actions. Between these two processes, as I mentioned, Buddha's story. When Buddha was ascending from samprajnata to asamprajnata state, he had to go through these challenges, memories, some past impressions from his previous life cycles, 554 life cycles, emerged in his mind in the mental system. So they are now available for the Jataka tales, Jataka stories. So Buddha was born sometimes as a king, as a prince, as a philosopher, sometimes as an elephant, all kinds of human beings and also members of the animal kingdom, he took birth. But in all these births, he manifested one aspect of Buddhahood, a discerning wisdom, a spiritual wisdom, a spiritual attitude, an intellectual maturity, maturity in attitudes and thoughts and ideas and actions. And finally, he became Buddha. Now, how did he transcend, face these memories? That's what Bhoja is explaining. Of course, Bhoja doesn't refer to Buddha. Virama pratyascha so viramascaso pratyascha virama pratyaha. What is virama pratyaha? When these memories come, we immediately negate them. This is not true. This is not real. This vritti is not genuine. He was born as a prince, and memories from his previous life cycles, maybe thousands of years earlier, when he lived as an elephant or a prince or a king or a philosopher, a saint, and so on, 554 Jataka tales. All these vrittis from previous life cycles re-emerged in the mental system. So through repeated practice of merging all these vrittis into the mind, into the mental system, through one process, neti neti, not this, this is not true, this is not permanent, this is all momentary things. Through this constant intellectual exercise, Buddha negated all these memories and impressions from previous life cycles. That's why Bhoja says, idi virama pratyeha tasya abhyasaka, this repetition, pauna punyena chedasi niveshanam. So this repetition, repeated assertion that this memory is not genuine, this memory is coming from a previous life cycle, it has no real existence, it is only a vritti, a vasana, samskara that comes from a previous life cycle, it has nothing to do with my life right now. This continue, pavana punyana means again and again. When you do that, these vrittis are completely removed. Tatra yakajit vritti ullasati tasya neti neti idi nairandiryena paryudasanam. Continuous negation of these memories. Through this, one ascends from samprajnata state to asamprajnata state. In samprajnata state, we are able to gain mastery over nature, which means over our own attitudes, our own impressions, our own vrittis, vasanas and samskaras. But when we reach asamprajnata samadhi, along with mastery, we are also able to get complete freedom. Mastery and freedom are two different things. You may be able to restrain your mind or your senses doing certain things or assuming certain attitudes. When they are about to do that. So there is mastery because you are able to control them. But you are not able to prevent it from manifesting, emerging in your mind. When they emerge in the mind, they don't take an act, they take the form of an action, because a vritti may, an impression from previous life cycle may emerge in the mental system, but when it's about to take the form of an attitude or action, you are able to restrain it. That is possible in samprajnata samadhi. That's why Buddha could negate in his mind all these previous memories. If he ever identified with it, he would not have reached Buddhahood. He could transcend them. So now we will take up the 18th sutra. This is the perfect superconscious and asamprajnata samadhi, the state which gives us freedom. Vivekananda explains this. Asamprajnata samadhi means not only mastery, but complete perfect freedom. These memories may be there, but it is as good that they are not there. It makes no difference. The first state does not give us freedom. It doesn't liberate the soul. A man may attain to all powers, yet fall again. That's what happens, you know. People who practice yoga, people who practice pranayama, those who practice highly focused meditation without getting established in the fundamental disciplines of yama and niyama, frequently get into trouble. One simple example, if you practice pranayama or if you meditate at night in solitude for long hours, suddenly one person may feel an overflow of energy. So this energy may be just a manifestation of mental energy or nervous energy. This energy can lead to many problems. It could lead to flight of ideas, bipolar problems, or restlessness. If that person is not well established in certain fundamental disciplines, which are explained, which we already explained in detail many times when we discussed Yama and Niyama. This is one very gross example. Now, if spiritual seekers or even spiritual teachers, when they practice a lot of meditation, and when they don't correspondingly, if they don't practice the Yama, Niyama, Ahimsa, Satya, Steya, Brahmacharya, Abhigraha, Shauja, Sandosha, Tapasya, Adhyaya, Isha, Pradhana, we already discussed this many times, non-violence, non-possession of things belonging to others, non-stealing, comfort, contentment, inner contentment, purity, internal and external purity, reading scriptures, feeding the mind with good thoughts and ideas, purity, chastity of life, many of these values are fundamental values. Without getting fully established in these fundamental disciplines, if a person plunks headlong into intense spiritual practice, there will be danger. This is one classic example. But what I said earlier is a very common, it's what you can find, at least I come across 10 people every month who are facing it. But they come here, of course. I don't mention names, you know. So extreme meditation, because they read some books, you know, they read some books or maybe listen to something on you on internet, and suddenly midnight after working 5-15 hours mentally and physically fatigued and exhausted, maybe they did drinking some alcohol also, some people do that for additional effect, and meditate for 3 hours, and that is the royal pathway to psychological disorders. Because the surplus energy and heat generated should find an outlet. They should be diverted to creative, positive channels. And that is possible only through the practice of Yama and Niyama, these fundamental disciplines, which blocks the channels to negative, it blocks the energy from flowing to negative channels. So what happens is, this is a gross example. In this more intense form, spiritual teachers who get big some psychic powers, that's called mastery over nature, samprajnata samadhi. You can say they may not reach samadhi state, but still higher concentration always produces skills and abilities for the mind and intellect. Just as if you exercise your body in a certain manner, disciplined manner, body acquires special skills at the physical level. It happens in a much more intense way at the mental level through mental exercise like meditation. So before we acquire these skills, one should get fully established in Yama and Niyama. There's a Buddha practice for many, many years before he went through these experiences of memories coming from previous life cycles, like Jataka tales, which you can see when this book form is available. So Swami Vivekananda says, the first state does not give us freedom, only it gives us mastery over nature. Which means mastery over nature means powers, skills for the mind. A man may attain to all powers and yet he may fall again. There is no safeguard until the soul goes beyond nature. So we should be able to transcend nature. Mastery over nature is not enough. We should be able to transcend nature. It is very difficult to do so, although the method seems easy. The method is to meditate on the mind itself, and whenever thought comes, to strike it down, allowing no thought to come to the mind, thus making it an entire vacuum. That's why this higher samadhi is attained through constant practice of cessation of all mental activity. One should never try to practice this all of a sudden. That could lead to creating a void within the mind. So that's dangerous. It's an advanced state of meditation, which we will deal with the details in the next class. So now we will have interaction. We can, if there are doubts and additional topics to be discussed, most welcome.
When speaking of the mind, the personal mind, there are also collective minds as well. Now, who is doing the thinking with so many ideologies, political paradigms, social issues, wars, conflicts? And somehow we get entrapped in other people's minds. So whose mind are we in at times?
Yeah. So as you said, the cosmic mind, cosmic mind is a term in philosophy. That's not what you are implying, it's obvious. It means a collective mind of society, of nation as a whole. What we can do best is to be different and to evolve our own life so that in this totality, a little more positive ideas we can contribute. That's all we can do. No one could change the collective mind of a society. They've been trying for the last several thousands of years. Buddha tried, Lord Krishna tried, Jesus Christ tried, and I don't think if they come back, they'll have any reason to feel satisfied with the present state of affairs.
So that
doesn't mean that we can close the book and go. No. What it means is, but at the same time, in every age, there have been always some great, genuine spiritual seekers and teachers. They have prevented the world from collapsing, let us say. In fact, because they made their own contribution of positive psychic vibrations, thought currents, the totality. So that's all we can say. I can give an example. Think of a man like Dalai Lama and think of Tibet. Just see, one man is keeping up a great a Buddhist tradition, keeping alive. So the world, we need not become so desperate as to think the world is completely gone. It's all going, breaking down, it's all collapsing. That's a very pessimistic attitude. At the same time, everything is fine. That is also not a very rational approach to take. So what we can do, we can join the group of those great good people who have done something good for this collective, for keeping the collective mind in a state of balance. That's all we can do. Patanjali is just placing before us an individual oriented spiritual path. Right.
What does it look like when a thought manifests itself from a life of the past, of another life, of an animal, or how do you know that it's from not this life?
Yeah.
Especially when it's an animal.
Yeah.
Normally, but not just an animal.
Normally we don't remember, we don't recollect our memories from life cycles when we were like animals. Mostly memories mostly come from some experiences. We strongly register the impression, the mental system. We don't remember actions or events which did not directly register as a powerful influence in our mind. We dismiss them. What we remember mostly are memories of events in which we have played an active role. So mostly we remember when we feel when the positive side, a great attraction towards some higher ideals, higher thoughts, higher way of life, for which we didn't get any formal training, so far as this life is concerned. And also, there is no way that we can claim we inherited from our parents or grandparents, I mean biological heredity or anything. Then yoga and Vedanta philosophers will tell you there should be a reason for everything. So that reason should be another life cycle. And how we know that is, when you really feel, then at the subjective level we get a conviction. You feel at home with some sublime something idea. Then you feel it's coming from, it's yours. When we feel at home, whatever we feel at home with, in a very intimate way, that's our inheritance. Sometimes we feel when we go to a place, when you meet certain persons, when you relate to some events, you feel a complete distance, remoteness. In the opposite way, when you go to a place or a temple or a church or any place where, or if you go to a lecture, spiritual topics are discussed, you feel you feel at home with it. It means we belong there. That is a distant echo of these early associations. That's all we can see. We can only feel at the subjective level. Again, not at the collective level. So Vedanta and yoga tells you, it doesn't mean the whole nation traveling and taking the spiritual life, or a whole society meditating and samadhi. That is totally, it is totally the opposite of what yoga and Vedanta imply. Yoga and Vedanta, they discuss our individual spiritual journey. Spiritual journey is only at the individual level. Religion is for the society. 10,000 people may gather in a place and pray. That is religion. But if a person sits somewhere and thinks about the meaning of his life, and he suddenly identifies himself with some great noble thoughts and idea, he feels like renouncing, or he's making a great contribution, a total, a complete, intimate identification with the great ideal. That is spiritual at the individual level. So that's something interesting. Spirituality at the individual level. Religion may be for a whole nation, for a whole society. Spirituality is at the subjective level. It's interesting.
So, Swami, so what I gathered, you mentioned neti neti, not this, not this. I mean, it sounds like that is the main process for moving on. I mean, all of these things in the past are past. They have no meaning anymore. So all we can do is deny them and when they come and think positive thoughts. But most of these things that come in the mind, they are the past. They are just not true anymore, irrelevant. So neti neti is a big part of the past.
Yeah. And when we feel like identifying with a memory that emerges in the mind, which we are interested in, you know, when we are interested in something, then we actually pay attention to that. And if a memory emerges in the mental system, which is very pleasant, which we try to identify with, and if that becomes actually, if it is something that we should not identify, if you want to go beyond it, then this is not true. This is a memory coming from some previous life cycles. It is of no value, of no significance. This is how the mind negates it. And this especially applies when the mind shows a tendency to identify itself with that memory. In fact, that is called, in the Christian theological language, called temptation. That's all. Patanjali takes a very psychological approach. That's all. So this is temptation. So Saint Teresa of Avila, she has a simple method. This Satan is trying to play tricks with me. No, I won't allow him to do that. You know. So the evil is given an anthropomorphic interpretation. Great devotees of God in all traditions have done this and succeeded in getting liberated from the influence of negative thought currents. But Patanjali's system is pure psychology. He says, this memory is coming from a previous life cycle. It has nothing to do with my life in this life, with this life. So it is something that's not desirable. Once you understand it, you negate it. It's gone. When you identify it, then gets reinforced. A memory that we like, that we enjoy, will come back and gets reinforced. The more we remember, the more it gets reinforced. And the more it is likely to influence our actions and becomes an attitude. So once we negate it, it's gone. That's the idea. What many devotees in all religious traditions practiced, Patanjali is giving a very psychological interpretation. That's all. Yes. So now we'll conclude. So we'll continue the discussion in the next class. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Just I wanted to mention to you, we have a winter retreat in January 2018, January 6th and 7th, Saturday and Sunday. We have a winter retreat here in this hall.